Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Aaron David Miller, the Vice President and Distinguished Scholar at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, who has been an advisor to six Secretaries of State. Under President Clinton, he served as a Deputy Special Middle East Coordinator for Arab-Israeli negotiations. And his books include The Much Too Promised Land, America's Elusive Search for Arab-Israeli Peace, and his latest, Can America Have Another Great President? He has an article at CNN, Putin's Move Could Be Costly to U.S. Middle East. Welcome to Background Briefing, Aaron David Miller.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, the president met with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu on Monday in the White House, and he's made a statement saying over time, talking about Ukraine, this will be a costly proposition to Russia, and now is the time for them to consider whether they can serve their interests in a way that resorts to diplomacy as opposed to force. What do you think was Netanyahu's advice to him, given that he's right next door to Syria, which is obviously a very contentious situation?
I'm not sure the president solicited his advice on American policy toward Ukraine. I mean, I think the prime minister's view is clear, and small powers look at the behavior of great ones. They follow it with great curiosity and with great interest. And you know that the North Koreans, the Syrians, the Iranians, and the Israelis and others are following this particular crisis, looking for an assertive, even muscular response from the United States. And I suspect they're going to be disappointed. Geography, history, proximity, Putin's own national interests basically puts the president in a very disadvantaged position. The Russians have already acted, and operationally they're in control of Crimea, and I think their objective is fundamentally not to let Crimea drift west. And I think it's going to be extremely difficult to stop them. They may well end up being part of the problem and part of the solution whenever this crisis abates, ends up having to negotiate a way out. So no good options for Obama. And it's going to make an already difficult Middle East set of issues and a Middle East agenda even that much more difficult.
But it sounds like things could get hotter in Ukraine with Russia's UN envoy Vitaly Churkin in a speech at the UN saying that Mr. Yanukovych, the deposed leader of Ukraine, had made a request in writing to Russian President Vladimir Putin to use military force in Ukraine. So is your sense that things could get worse?
Well, the question is, what does Putin want? And how much leverage does he need? And to what degree and where does he have to project Russian military power in order to achieve that objective? I mean, in classic Putin style, he acted and he essentially is waiting to see what the response is. And I don't know if the allies, the Germans now, are posing all kinds of difficulties in terms of what kinds of sanctions can be applied. The Brits aren't sure what exactly we're going to be able to do to stop them. I mean, I'm not a, you know, this is a very tricky issue. I'm not an expert in Eastern Europe and former Soviet Union or Ukraine. But I know this, that we have now gotten ourselves into a situation where everyone says no to the United States without cost or consequence. Karzai of Afghanistan says no. Maliki of Iraq says no. Khamenei of Iran says no. Even our friends, the Egyptians, Israelis, Palestinians, usually say yes, but. So I think we really do have a problem. And I think the president has got to figure out a way to be as credible and as competent as possible, because this really is probably the most important crisis to date for his administration and for the legacy of his presidency. While he cares more about the middle class than he does about foreign policy. He's got 3 years left on the clock. And you put all these things together, Syria, how he deals with Iran, which at the moment seems to be positive rather than negative, and Ukraine, and you, even if you concede that most Americans really do want a much lower profile foreign policy, they also don't want to see their country humiliated and disrespected. That's the balance that the president has to find. I don't envy him, because I'm not sure there's a credible set of responses that could reverse these gains and constitute a win.
But Aaron David Miller, do you think that we have been humiliated by the deal that with Syria, which there are reports that Putin has contempt for Obama, it may even be tinged with a certain racism, but it looks as if Putin took Obama to the cleaners over Syria. He made the deal, and only 4% of these chemical weapons have apparently been corralled. The deal essentially puts Assad in control of the deal.
The reality is, unless the United States was prepared to apply direct military pressure and intercede in what is clearly a civil war that is likely to endure well beyond the Obama administration in some form or another, then we're going to be affecting the situation from the sidelines. And I think there's a great reluctance to use force in the wake of Iraq and Afghanistan that isn't carefully calibrated to achieving a clear set of objectives. I mean, after all, military power, and I've supported the president in terms of his risk aversion when it comes to Syria, military power is an instrument. That's all it is. It's an instrument to achieve a set of objectives. And if they're not thought through carefully and clearly, then you end up with Iraq and Afghanistan, where the costs, given what we have gotten in return, are just so skewed on the downside. And I think the president, you know, is constantly wrestling with this notion. After all, his mandate was to extricate America from the two longest and among the least profitable wars in its history, and not to get the United States into new foreign military adventures. And the pendulum may have swung too much to the risk aversion side. That's what his critics claim. And then so. But by and large, he's created a policy that reflects the temper of his times. You take a look at the Pew poll. In 50 years, numbers on Americans reluctant or convinced that we're too ambitious in our foreign policy have never been higher. And that reflects the policies of Iraq and Afghanistan. It reflects the focus on our own broken house, debt, dysfunctional politics, deficit, dependence on hydrocarbons. I call them the six deadly D's. These represent slow bleeds which are sucking our national power, extracting it. And it's no wonder Americans aren't interested in foreign policy and don't see the point or purpose. Unless our vital interests are at stake, and unless we can somehow at least create a risk calculation that offers the prospects of winning, that's the real problem.
Well, of course, the president didn't use force in Syria, and the American people were, I think, signaling pretty clearly that they didn't want him to do that.
But exactly.
I'm wondering whether Putin has misread that, and maybe the shoe is on the other foot now with Putin, where he's got himself embroiled in a reckless misadventure like we did in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Well, you know, he shares a common... I mean, no, this is Russia's zone. The analogy here would be Cuba, or some variation of the Monroe Doctrine. No, I don't... The Russians may still stumble through overreach or through some unpredictable event in Ukraine itself. Who knows? But this is classic Russian nationalism seeking to preserve what they consider to be their interests in their sphere and in their zone. We invaded Iraq, a country roughly the size population-wise of the state of California, with insufficient forces and a woeful misunderstanding of the politics there, with goals and objectives that were hardly realizable. It's no wonder we failed. And this, Putin's calculations, I think, are much different, and he feels a much higher confidence level. And the factors that might contribute to a win for Putin are much, much less complex than our enterprise in Iraq and Afghanistan.
But is there a possibility that Obama will revisit the Syrian policy, in as much as I mentioned earlier, it does look as if he made that deal made Assad indispensable to the deal, and apparently the Russians are not being particularly helpful at Geneva. Do you think?
Well, Syria's a lost cause. I mean, the only way Obama would revisit that policy is if somehow you could literally trace a terrorist attack against American interests or on American soil to Al Qaeda spinoffs, Jabhat al-Nusra, or some of the other groups to Syria proper. I find it almost unimaginable unless Assad completely abandons the Russian U.S. chemical framework, what is now a U.N. framework to dismantle and destroy chemical weapons. I mean, there is not only is there no support in this country for unilateral military action. The question is, what is it designed to achieve? If the president tomorrow wanted to overthrow Bashar Assad, he could commit himself to an integrated, muscular policy that could do so. But then the question you have to ask yourself, what is the next step? You know, you take military action. You assume responsibility. Who's going to pay for Syria? Who's going to put in the billions required to unite the country? Who's going to produce the thousands of peacekeepers necessary to stop the vendettas and the bloodletting? Who's going to put Humpty Dumpty back together? I don't want America getting stuck with the check for Syria. And neither does the vast majority of the American public.
Well, we might get stuck with the check for Ukraine, which would be enormous.
No, we're not going to get stuck with the check. Uh-huh. Ukraine is in Europe.
But then
we're not going to confront the Russians militarily. We may be able to cobble together some sanctions. Maybe they're effective. Now, Ukraine is a Russian-European mm-hmm. problem, and it will remain primarily that, no matter how we try to own it.
Right, but it's an economic basket case that's been looted by the previous regime. Apparently there's nothing left in the treasuries.
I'm sure that's true. Yeah. And you're not dealing with a bunch of Democrats either in terms of some of these opposition groups.
Exactly.
Who are extremist and anti-Semitic to boot.
Right.
So, you know, it's like, you know, again, we want Hollywood endings for all these things, and we're not going to have.
Right. Well, just in closing then, in terms of your point, though, about people around the world like the North Koreans and the Syrians and others not taking America seriously anymore, and even our allies saying yes, but, and they're not taking us seriously in the way that they've been used to. You know, if the president is behaving in a rational and reasonable way and doing exactly what you said, which is thinking about the consequences and being very judicious about using military force, what are we supposed to do to let the rest of the world know that we're not Uncle Sucker?
Well, you protect your vital interests. You project power when, in fact, you have a chance of succeeding. Our vital interests in the Middle East are four. Preventing another attack against the continental United States, reducing our dependence on Arab hydrocarbons, extricating ourselves from Iraq and Afghanistan, and stopping Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. Those are the four, and I didn't even put it on the list because it's so taken for granted, and that is maintaining a special relationship with the state of Israel, guaranteeing at least Israel's qualitative edge when it comes to its capacity to defend itself. The other two interests, what we do about the Arab Spring, intercession in the internal affairs of other countries, and the pursuit of Arab-Israeli peace are discretionary. It's not that they're not important, it's just our capacity to fix these things is highly limited. So, well, I'm not calling for American isolation. I mean, I am calling, however, for a unforgiving assessment of what constitutes American interests and how best to achieve them. We don't have an interest. It may be construed as a vital interest of the United States to stop the Russian aggression in Crimea. The question is, how do you do it? And this notion of American credibility, which we tout, is fine. We need to be credible. Being credible means being believable. But you can pursue policies in defense and in the name of credibility that are stupid and lead to unbelievably negative consequences. Vietnam is a classic example. I mean, Iraq didn't start that way, but the investment—it became an investment trap, and it was a trap that we finally extricated ourselves from. But look at the results of a 9 or 10 year war: 6,000 plus Americans dead, trillions expended, a lot of American credibility, and for what? what is it that we actually achieved there that was worth the cost? And the same fate is in store for Afghanistan as well. So what are our vital interests in the world? Yes, it is not in our interest to see Putin gobble up Crimea. The question is, what can we do about it? And how to be smart about a response. And I think the president has no choice. I think Putin would have moved into Syria, whether the Obama had launched a few cruise missiles back in September, it wouldn't have mattered. Crimea and Ukraine are vital Russian national interests. Full stop.
Well, Dave, Aaron David Miller, I thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Pleasure. Take care.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with Aaron David Miller, a vice president and distinguished scholar at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, who has been an advisor to six secretaries of state. Under President Clinton, he served as the deputy special Middle East coordinator for Arab-Israeli negotiations, and his books include The Much Too Promised Land, America's Elusive Search for Arab-Israeli Peace, and his latest, Can America Have Another Great President? He has an article at CNN, Putin's Move Could Be Costly to U.S. Middle East.
This has been Background Briefing. I am Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcast at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared by half.